Hello, everybody. I'm Rebecca Buttig. Welcome to Soapy.
And I'm Greg Rickhart. I'm Becky Jo.
Hi. You're always laughing at me.
You tickle me. You do.
I tickle you?
Yes, that you do. You look lovely. Weird. It's been a minute since I've seen you. I'm just happy to be here and happy to see you.
Well, I'm happy to be here. I'm excited about our guest today.
I am too.
I've only seen this beautiful woman peripherally through the hallways, kind of like, hello.
Does she say hi to you?
Or no, when she doesn't say hi to me. So I'm going to get to the bottom of that.
Smart woman. Yeah.
So, but you've worked with her.
Yes. In fact,
we should tell everyone who this is that we're talking about.
Well, why don't we tease it for another minute?
Okay.
My very first scene on The Young and the Restless back in 2003 was with our lovely, beautiful, and very talented guest, Crystal Khalil.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Your very first scene.
Yes. Well, we can talk about it when she gets here, but.
Poor Crystal.
We had a very interesting relationship, and we'll save it for when she's here, but she's just a spectacular young woman, and I haven't seen her in a minute, so I'm really excited to see our guest, who will be with us when we get back, Crystal Khalil. Crystal Khalil, welcome to Soapy.
Thank you.
It is so great to see you.
You too. It's been so long,
it's
I feel
been
like.
A long time.
And I feel like I've seen you peripherally for so long. Yeah. I've seen you in the hallway.
We would just wave.
Yes.
Hey.
Yeah.
But yeah, not talk.
Why?
You know,
why don't we do
we're
that?
Busy.
Well, I know. But I now that we're not in the same place, I miss it. I miss not seeing people.
Like, yeah. Same.
Yeah, no one's there anymore except you guys.
It's like a ghost town. No one's there. Price is Right left. You guys left.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about CBS Television City, where Bold and Beautiful was shot for 38 years before you guys moved. Yeah. Price is Right moved, but Young and Restless is still there.
We're still there.
Alone.
Alone.
In the empty halls.
I think actually Bill Maher might still be there.
Oh yeah, Bill Maher's there.
And that's it. That might be it.
Yeah. Okay, so this morning I texted Marnie Saeeda. I know.
Marnie.
Casting director Marnie Saeeda, who cast both of us on Young and the Restless, cast me on Days of Our Lives. And I said, do you have a fun story about when Crystal first started? And she said, the first one that comes to mind, she goes, it's not exactly a fun story, but we had such an exhaustive search for the character of Lily Winters. And there were some really talented young women who came in. And then Crystal came in and just blew this thing out of the water. And it was her job from the second she came in for that audition.
Wow. Yeah. That's so nice to hear.
Do you remember that?
I do remember. Yes, I remember all of it. And I don't have a good memory because most of my life I've blocked out. But I do remember it because it was just such like a intense experience.
How so?
Well, I was 14 and I had always, you know, auditioned for all these Disney projects. So I auditioned for, you know, That's So Raven.
Yeah.
It was between me and Raven, Simone, and it was called Absolutely Psychic because she was like this girl who had psychic ability. And but when she got the role, they named it after her. But like I lost that part and I was just so devastated because for the network call, like network was like there were like 20 people in the room watching me. And I've always had such performance anxiety.
Me too.
And I just completely bombed the audition and it was terrible. So I was just devastated and I was actually going to quit acting. And I then got the final call for Young and the Restless and I wasn't going to go because I was like, you know what? I'm done. Like, I don't want to do this anymore. I just want to hang out with my friends. Like, I was just devastated. And my brother, who is 7 years older than me, he quit acting the same age that I was at that time. And he was like, Crystal, I promise you, like, I actually really regret quitting. He's like, just go on this audition. And if you don't get it, you can quit. But if you just go. And I was like, fine, if I don't get it, I'm done. And then I went and I remember I had the screen test with Christoph St. John. It's just like, it's so easy to act with him because he's just so there. And I remember just being on set. And that was my first time where a screen test, you were actually on set. Like it was an on-camera thing. I had never experienced that before.
You weren't in an executive room.
Yeah, I'm always used to an executive room and like not, you know, reading with a casting director. Mm-hmm. So it was my first time like being with an actor and like having makeup done, which just helps you
and
really be able to like do your best work, you know?
And you're on the stage, you're on the set, and it feels different from an audition because it's easier to imagine yourself in these circumstances with more of the world built around you.
Exactly. And so it was like a scene where I had to be emotional, and I always had issues being emotional in auditions, but because I was there with him, it just came and it happened and it was natural and I felt so good. And yeah, it was amazing. So it stands out in my mind a lot.
And that's crazy at 14 to access emotion. Cause I don't know, for me, when I started, it was so, you're so vulnerable when you access emotion, and that at that age, you're so self-conscious, yeah, more so than you are when you get older, I think.
I mean, I guess for me, it didn't feel that way because I had been acting since I was five and just being in like acting classes and,
yeah,
you know, I actually didn't want to be an actor. My mom forced me.
Oh, really?
She was like the typical story of like, she wanted to be an actress and then ended up putting me into, yep, entertainment.
What did you want to do?
I don't know. I never had the chance to even decide or think about it. I have one memory of like wanting to be a veterinarian, but
I did too.
Oh, you did? Mm-hmm. Yeah. I loved animals, but like, yeah, I never had the chance to really figure out what I wanted to be. But like, mm-hmm, yeah. So for me, it didn't feel vulnerable. It just kind of felt like this was like who I was and what I did, because it was always what I did.
But you had, I remember, and we'll get to how we started working together, but I remember we must have had scenes right before or right after these scenes that you were shooting with Christoph, and it was me and Vicky Rowell on stage, but off camera, and you and Christoph were doing this scene together, and I was new to the show, and we were just watching the two of you just both give these powerhouse performances. And I looked over to Vicky and I said, she's incredible. And she said, she has such access and she's so in touch with her instrument. And I was like, yeah. Also, what's so amazing is, to Rebecca's point, is that most teenagers, you are like, I think being a teenager is the hardest time in a person's, mm-hmm, life. One of the hardest times. Mm-hmm. You are going from being a child to being an adult. You're going through puberty. You're self-conscious, all of these things. And then to have to do that on camera, on a television show, and to be brilliant while you're doing it, it's a pretty remarkable thing.
It is a feat.
Oh, thanks.
But have you ever like taken a moment to be like, oh yeah, that is not something, my experience is quite unique.
Yeah. No, I actually haven't thought about it that way, but now hearing you talk, I'm like, wow, I really peaked at 14.
Like, no, you were 15 by then.
No, you didn't. We're just 15. Because we were like lost 14-year-olds. So.
Yeah.
I never thought about that. We were
self-assured. Yeah. I mean, I guess that's true. Yeah. Like I said, I think because of doing it so young, it just was second nature. It wasn't anything I really thought about. It was just something that I did. So...
I just
think under pressure and all of that, there is auditions and things like that. Sometimes it's just hard to access that, because just from the nerves alone, you know?
Also, again, like, I have many a ruined screen test by being in a room full with 20 executives where you're like, this is a life-changing moment. And I bet the fact that you were like, I'm giving it up if I don't get this, was like, that like, I don't give a shit attitude is often what is like the... key to success.
Totally. You hear that story over and over.
Yeah.
So starting at 14, I...
You were 19 when you started, right?
I was 19 when I started.
Oh, but, that's really
good. Not on a soap. I was a little older, but you've stayed for so long. There was a little break that you took, mm-hmm, at one point.
More than one, right?
Yeah.
Was it more than one?
I probably left like 2.5 times. But, you know, I was saying that I think starting so young, I just didn't have an appreciation for what I had. And it was like, you kind of want to explore the world and see what's out there. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, like I left a couple times because I was like, I don't want to be on this show anymore. And then as you get older, you're like, this is the best job in the world. And please keep me.
Yes.
Let me stay.
For so many reasons.
Yes, yes.
For so many reasons. Like just being able to stay in one spot, especially as a mother.
Yes.
Not having to travel.
Exactly. Not traveling, not doing night shoots. Yes. It's like a 9-to-5 job. You know, you know when you're getting there, you know when you're done. And it's amazing. I can see my kids in the morning. I can put them to bed. Yeah. And I don't even work every day. So I can still have those days with them where I'm taking them to the park. And, you know, it's a dream.
It's the best.
How did you juggle working at 14 and also schoolwork? And
I was homeschooled.
Okay.
And so, which is why I'm not very well educated. I'm kidding. School homeschooling is the best. My mom, though, did not handle my schooling the best.
I remember your mom.
Oh, God. She's going to watch us and be like, I saw you talking about me. Da, 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 da. You have no appreciation. I already know what's going to happen. No, but I also didn't have like a tutor at home, but I wasn't working on the set every day. And when I was on set, they had a school tutor there. So that was great. But no, I mean, I was pretty much like teaching myself. Like it was... Yeah, it was bad. I taught myself algebra. It was like, I was literally in my room. I remember, I have this memory of like going to the back of the book, seeing what the answer was, and then having to like figure out the formula and work backwards to learn algebra because I had no one to help me.
And you didn't have the internet like you do now, I guess.
No.
You could just be like,
that's why I look at my 16-year-old who has like horrible grades and I'm like, you know what? You are just a disappointment.
I taught myself algebra.
I taught myself algebra.
Smart enough to teach yourself algebra, but not smart enough to realize that you don't need to know algebra for anything that you are going to do.
That I was going to do, yeah. Although my husband's in private equity and he like uses algebra every day. Yeah. And I'm like, really? I'm like, using algebra?
Maybe that's your backup.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, so.
Did you think about pursuing college?
You know, my mom was encouraging me to, but then in my mind, I just was kind of like, well, why would I go and spend the money to learn something when I'm not going to use it towards what I'm actually doing? Like, why would I do that? But now as an adult looking back, I'm like, I really wish I had.
It's never too late.
Me too.
I know. It's never too late. Yeah. I feel like for most people. Yeah. I feel like it would have been a good experience and, you know.
Yeah.
I feel like I should have.
How old were you when you left the first time and how was that hiatus from that first hiatus for you?
I was 17 when I left the first time. And yeah, I was like, I just was not doing anything.
And was that after the Lily and Daniel in Malibu storyline?
Yes. It was like my first contract period was 3 years. Uh-huh. So it was like 14 to 17. And then I was like, okay, I'm going to leave because I just figured that's what I would do. And then, you know, I didn't do anything for a year and I was like, oh, okay, I guess I'll go back. And then I went back and then I left again. I can't remember what age I was, but it was probably like 6 years later. I left again for about 6 months, then came back. And then I left again in 2019 because I moved to Toronto with my now husband for a year. And then I was there and I was like, this whole not working thing is awful.
Were you trying to work in Toronto?
Yeah. Like I was auditioning and, you know, putting myself on tape for things, but then COVID happened.
Oh, yeah.
Mm. And then COVID was, you know, going on. And then I was living in Toronto and I'm not used to the snow and it was freezing and I was scraping ice off of my car windshield before I could drive. And I remember thinking to myself, like, I don't have to live like this, you know, like I just, you know, what am I doing here? I'm like, get me back to California. And then I just missed my job and missed working. And so I left Toronto and came back. And now I'm like, don't ever leave ever again.
And your husband was from Toronto, I'm guessing?
Yeah.
He was cool with coming back.
Yeah, he actually always wanted to live in LA, but then with his job, he was like, I need to be in Canada. Yeah. But then when COVID happened, it was like everything became Zoom.
Everywhere, yeah.
Yeah, and now he was like, oh, okay, I guess it's fine, and came to LA, and, you know, he loves it. Yeah. So
I was saying, I think you need to, whether you leave on your own or whether you leave because your bosses tell you it's time for you to go, I think that you can't fully have the gratitude I believe we all possess now without having been away from the job.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But let's get back to, so you did so much in those first 3 years. Like they knew what they had and they were constantly throwing incredible storyline after incredible storyline at you.
You know, one of the best was creepy Kevin Fisher.
God, fishing for love.
Fishing for love.
We were swiping right before Tinder
existed.
Oh my
gosh, that was your handle? Fishing for love?
Fishing for love. That was nuts. Because it was a whole like internet predator storyline to bring awareness around it. Which was great because that was really big at the time.
Today.
Still happens.
And it was sort of at the, you know, the onset of
catfishing and like all of that stuff. It was like the beginning of it.
But it was, I was thinking about it yesterday, of course, in preparation for today. And I was like, I wish that I had a little more emotional maturity around that situation at the time because we were kids and it was so awkward and uncomfortable. And correct me if I'm wrong, but was I your first on-screen kiss?
First on-screen kiss.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
I was
sorry.
16. I know. Oh, how old are you?
26.
You were 26.
Not great, guys. Not great. I was looking for photos of us, and there's one where I gift you like some lingerie. Do you remember this?
Oh yes. Oh yeah. Annie gave me chlamydia. Oh. Yeah. Yeah. where I would go around and fans would be like, oh my God.
Are you okay now?
Did you take your pills?
No.
And I was like, oh no, I don't actually have chlamydia. I was like,
I didn't either. Yeah,
this was a character thing. That was another thing they were bringing awareness to, was like
STDs
and that whole thing. Oh yeah.
But again, I think we
used to have jokes. I remember you'd come out of the bathroom
just screaming.
and the crew guys would put a smoke machine.
Oh, no. Oh, it was terrible. Terrible.
Oh my God. It was.
But you were
young. I mean, honestly, if you didn't bring humor to it, it probably would have like scarred you.
It was serious content.
Yes. And awkward and, and we survived.
Yes, we did it.
And also, again, I think the show won awards for that storyline because it was bringing awareness, and people who were in charge, who were more emotionally mature than we were at the time, were telling an important story.
Exactly. Is there a storyline that you've had over the years on Young and the Restless that have affected you personally as a person?
I would say like the cancer one I had, where Lily had ovarian cancer. Like that was a big one because, I had to wear a bald cap too because Lily shaved her head. And that was a really amazing one because so many people were like, you know, I have cancer and this brought so much inspiration. And, you know, you always hear those stories of when people say that, but then it's like when it actually happens to you, you're like, wow, like this really did affect someone. And, you know, that's such like a nice feeling to have.
Yeah.
So that was a really powerful one for me that I loved.
What about
and
you?
Also, it was like issues around surrogacy too, like IVF, because Lily and Al couldn't have kids, and then I had to have a surrogate, and that was like a really big one of like infertility issues, and I feel like there's been like some.
This
really...
is what I love about soaps.
I know.
I think people can really connect to a lot of the stories because they're current and relatable.
Yeah.
What were you going to ask me?
Did you ever have a story that where affected people, you personally?
I think they all do in some way, right?
Yeah. Well, maybe not all, but some are a little like. Mm.
Yeah, I guess. I certainly didn't relate to having Stockholm syndrome and robbing banks wearing a giant chipmunk head. So no, maybe not all of them.
Oh my God!
Remember that?
Wait, was that on?
That was on Young and Restless.
That was.
Yeah,
I don't remember that.
Maybe it was during one of your hiatuses, but
please get a photo of this?
Oh, they
you
exist.
Had a chipmunk
they exist?
Head?
Yeah,
I was kidnapped. When we're done.
I had Stockholm syndrome. And so I was sympathizing with my captor, and then I was robbing banks wearing a giant, bloody chipmunk mascot head.
Okay.
Jealous?
That's crazy. That's nuts.
Apparently, it was Maria Bell's homage to Passions, because Passions had just been canceled. And she's like, let's kind of...
Oh, okay. That makes sense. Because that's a little out there for our show. Our show has never been...
No, it's a little more reality-based. Yes, and she called me up to her office and told me about it. And I was like, this sounds crazy. And she said, you have the depth as an actor to be able to play this and bring reality to it. And I was like, okay.
Yeah.
And then we played the story and I'm like, this is dreadful. But I love
sure
Maria.
I'm sure it was amazing though.
It was not.
We've all had to do things where I think we have to step out of our comfort zones and do things that are a little like.
Did you have one that was crazy?
I had out Bianca, who was a character on our show that was a lesbian. My character was going around calling her Lesbianca and like I was a bully basically.
Oh, that's
fun. I guess, but in retrospect, I'm like, God, you know, I don't know if you could get away with that now, but I guess that's what happened back then. Yeah. You know, people were scared to come out. So, people still are, but, I liked that story.
Yeah.
Cause it was.
Well, cause you get to play a villain. I've gotten to play villains are fun.
Yeah, villains are fun.
If you can, you know.
I know, I've never gotten to play one. Lily's always been like a very sweet, nice, straight-laced person. I'm like, I would love to be.
Is there a role that you would like to play?
I'd love to have an issue. Give me a drug problem. I'm like, make me a...
What's the worst thing? Well, besides for spending too much time on the internet when you were 15, what's the worst thing Lily's done? And you ran away to Malibu. You've had some questionable...
The worst thing, I mean, like normal cheating.
Yeah.
You know, everyone on soaps have cheated.
Yeah.
Lily's never done anything.
Is there a character you'd like to play, or would you want, like, do you want to continue to play Lily and see her go through some?
Yeah, I'd love to see Lily, you know, go through something and, like, lose control. Mm-hmm. That would be really amazing. Yeah.
Tell us about having Shamar Moore and Vivica A. Fox on set.
So Malcolm comes back and, you know, he has...
He plays your father,
correct? He plays my dad uncle. He's my uncle dad.
Because there was a paternity.
So Christoph Neal, he's my dad. But then I find out he's actually my uncle, and his brother, Shamar Malcolm, is my dad. But I grew up with Malcolm as my uncle.
Okay.
So I still call him Uncle Malcolm, even though he's biologically my dad.
Got it.
So he's my uncle dad.
Your uncle dad.
Yes. So
I kind of like that. My uncle dad.
My uncle dad. Yeah. So yeah, he comes back and, the whole thing is like Malcolm has like an issue and he comes to town to tell Lily and, you know, it brings them together and it's like a whole thing.
Yeah.
And then Vivica, you know, plays into that somehow. And it's going to be really fun.
Did you stay in touch with Shamar when he left the show?
A little bit in the beginning. And then we kind of just lost contact over the past, I would say, like 4 years. Mm-hmm. But before, yeah, we would like text every now and then. Happy birthday. How are you? That kind of thing. But not really.
Who's your closest friend that you've made from the show? Not him.
I think I know. Can I answer it? Brighton.
Yeah. Brighton.
Who is incredible. But tell us about your relationship with Brighton.
Yeah, he plays my brother on the show. And, you know, he's my son's godfather in real life.
Aww.
But I met him when I was 9. I did an episode of Family Matters.
And he was on Family Matters.
And so we worked together when we were 9 years old. And then he screen tested at 17 for Young and the Restless. And I was like, oh, yeah, you've got to hire this guy. Like, he's so great. But we hadn't talked from 9 to 17. Like, I didn't talk to him. I only did one episode.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, now we've been friends ever since.
Another important storyline because he came on as a foster child.
Yes. Right? Oh, yeah, that's right. That was another, like, really great storyline.
And actually, again, speaking to the uniqueness of your situation, sort of growing up as a child actor, and you and Brighton have similar experiences, right? Because you were kids and have managed to be very like grounded and successful adults and survived like the chaos of being a child actor in this town.
Yeah. I think, you know, well, for him, it was a testament to his parents.
Yeah.
For me, I don't know.
It was a testament to your ability to teach yourself algebra. Yeah.
So would you would you encourage your kids, your own kids, to pursue a career?
Would I encourage them? No. If they were like, oh, I really want to do this, I'd be like, okay, well, here's the reality and here's what you've got to do. But no, I wouldn't encourage anyone. I think it's crazy.
It's crazy. I have a friend who,
We got lucky.
Yeah.
We got so lucky, you know?
Did you have like, again, I can speak to the fact that you were nurtured and mentored at Young and Restless, but do you have experiences of being on sets where you were, where you didn't feel safe?
You know, no, I never, I mean, I would say maybe in ways of like, maybe someone, treating me a certain way, like or talking down to me a certain way. And I was like a teenager and they were an adult, right? Like that, I've had experiences like that where it's been really stressful and, you know, you feel like something's wrong with you because, oh, if they're being this way towards me, something must be wrong with me. But I would say that's the only way that I experience something negative. But I think, you know, because most of my life has been on this show, it's like I've been protected in a sense because it really is like family on our show, which is so great.
Do you, because we've talked about this for us personally, but like, have you reached a moment or can you think of a moment where you said, oh, I have switched gears. I'm no longer the young ingenue. And now I have a different responsibility as someone on this show with younger people.
I think she's still young.
I was like, wow, it's weird to not be the youngest person anymore. Because before, remember, everyone was like 25, 26, and I was 17.
Yeah.
And now I'm like, wait, how old are you? You're 22? I'm older than you?
Or you have grown children on the show.
Yes. That's very weird for me now. And now I'm like, oh, wow. I'm the old one in the
you're
group.
You're not the old
season.
You're Jeannie Cooper.
I'm Jeannie Cooper.
When you do that voice, you sounded like her.
I'm the old one. Listen here, little
come
one.
Come into my room. I'm going to give you some advice.
It's like, it is weird. It's very weird.
If you could go back and do it all again, what would you give yourself advice? What kind of advice would you give yourself?
Just that everything is always going to be okay.
Yeah.
You know, like don't sweat the small stuff. It's like, I think I always was just kind of frantic in my head, and you know, I didn't feel very grounded inside a lot of times. And I would say, just everything will always work out. You might not know how, but it always does. Yeah. Somehow.
Did your brother ever go back to acting?
No, none of them did. I have three brothers and they all were in acting because of my mom. And then they all quit around that age, like 14, 15. And none of them went back. No. Yeah.
Your mom must be thrilled that you're still.
Oh, yeah. Are you kidding? She's now acting.
She is?
Oh, yeah. She's like, oh, I got a commercial. Sorry, I'm busy. I can't see my grandkids. I'm going to Atlanta to do an Amazon commercial. I'm like, okay, great.
Oh, my God. That's amazing.
So when you left the show that first time, was she like disappointed? Did she give you any sort of advice when you left that first time?
You know, actually, no. I mean, I guess the bad thing about my mom is she's never really like parented, but the good thing about her is that she's also never really parented. And so, you know, all of us are very independent people and we're all very self-assured.
And you're the baby. Yeah.
Yes. And I think it's because our parents didn't really do it much. And so we kind of were left to our own devices, which in a way kind of, I think, is good in some ways because it makes you have to start thinking for yourself. Like with my oldest son, I'm like, he can't do anything. He can't do anything.
Well, you learn. Now you can raise your 2-year-old and your baby differently.
I know. Right? I'm going to. Trust me. Yeah. I'm like, you were the first one. I learned what not to do on you.
Well, you know, also you remind me of my sister in a lot of ways in that she had my two nephews young, was married, got divorced, remarried years later. And after my son was born, went home with baby fever. And so she had two teenagers and then has a daughter who's a year younger than my son.
Yeah.
So she always jokes about the experience of being the young mom who was seeking out advice and information. And now she's like the sage mother who is telling the younger moms about what they're doing right and wrong. And
Exactly. That's how it feels. I mean, I've learned so much about with like social media and like the phone devices, right? Like he was born in 2010. So that was like the beginning of everything where, remember Baby Einstein? Yes. Like I used to have him watch, I used to sit in front of the TV to watch Baby Einstein.
He'll be smart because it's called Einstein.
His brain. Now I know I actually made him dumber. And I'm like, this is why the boy can't do anything because he was just watching Baby.
Have you read Anxious Generation?
No, but I've been listening to so many podcasts about like short form videos and like what they do to your brain.
But your son has the misfortune of being that first generation of like, we didn't know any better.
And that's why they're called like the lost generation. Yeah. And they really are. It's like, I see, and you know, hopefully he can recoup some brain cells, but we'll see.
He's young. He's got plenty of time.
Can become an advocate for all of that.
Yeah, maybe.
For the anti-screen movement.
I don't know. He failed his permit test twice. So I don't know if he's going to be an advocate for anything. But I'm putting him on blast on this show. It's okay, Caden. I love you. You are brilliant.
Oh, does he like
do you think
being...
Do you think he'll even listen or watch?
Does he like being a big brother?
He does, actually. Good. At first, he was very jealous.
Yeah.
He had some, like, there was a period, because he was 13 years.
It's a long
years,
period of time to be an only child.
Of him being the only kid. And he was like, it's so weird that you're going to love someone as much as me. And, you know, are you going to still care? I mean, but he's also very in touch with his feelings, I will say. Like, that's one thing about him that's really amazing as a teenage boy. He's very, like, self-aware when it comes to how he feels. And so we had so many conversations. And when Remy first came around, he was at first like, oh, you know, and he couldn't play with him. But now he's like, he can play with him and interact. And now he's understanding like, oh, wow, when I grow up, I have siblings and I'm going to have people there with me. Because he always hated being an only child.
Yeah.
He always said, like, I wish I had a sibling.
Oh, God. My kid begged. I'm like, dude, I had you at 80. So I don't know what I can tell you. I waited way too long.
Yeah.
We tried. We tried for years and years to give Monty a sibling. And it just wasn't in the cards. And I think we reached a point where we're like, this is our family and this is great.
Yeah.
But I miss that for him because I think there's a lot of benefits too of having to share that spotlight.
There is. And but I do see that with him with like interacting with other kids and not knowing how to be flexible, you know, and it's because he was so used to everything being his way. So I see that.
That word comes up in my house so often. And we always will say, we've got to work on flexibility. And but you're saying like a lot of the words you're saying, are you, if you don't mind my asking, I hope it's not too personal, are you a very therapized person? Have you been in a lot of therapy in your life?
I was when I was younger. A lot of therapy? No, I probably should have been.
Well, it's
I should have been.
Why are you asking, Greg?
Because I had a lot of issues. But you know, honestly, what really helped me was more like spiritual, like medicine.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if we're able to talk about
Go
that.
Ahead.
Okay, well,
nothing's off limits. Whatever you're comfortable with.
I did a lot of ayahuasca.
Oh, yeah. You did?
And that really, I would say that was like 10 years of therapy in one night.
Yeah.
And I did that, like that I would say made the biggest impact on my life and my awareness around issues.
Do you feel like it was like before ayahuasca and after? Like, was that?
Oh yeah.
Wow.
Oh yeah.
Tell us more about it. Cause I'm trying to get my husband to do it.
Oh, my first time doing it, I was 25.
Mm-hmm. Wait.
And
I'm trying to get my husband to do it, not you.
I don't need it.
Oh, right.
Oh, that means you need it. That means you need to do it.
I've been years and years of therapy.
Go ahead.
No, it was just, I mean, I had a lot of issues just with like my family life. Like my dad was, you know, a very tough person.
You were a child of both immigrant parents?
My dad is from Pakistan and, you know, he was not a great person and there was a lot of trauma in my household growing up. And so I think that just made me feel this very, like, I was always like this because I grew up in a very traumatic setting and I didn't know how to deal with things. And so after having my son at 22, I think that really made me be like, hey, I've got to like work on myself and there's issues here that were coming up. And so Elizabeth Hendrickson actually introduced me to this woman who does Reiki.
Mm-hmm.
And by doing Reiki with her, she was like, you know, I really think you would benefit from, she's like, you're messed up. I think you would benefit from this. And I was like, yeah, absolutely. Cause I've never been scared to like go to those dark places. Mm-hmm. For me, it's like, that's exciting. Like let's dig in and like see what's going on. And it just really made me deal with things as like it was almost like I was experiencing what my child self went through, but from a non-traumatic place. Mm. And so I was really able to look at things and deal with them and like feel the feelings. And yeah, I remember like after that first, I remember I had so much self-hatred that I didn't realize was there. And I remember being in this bathroom and I was wanting to like take off everything, like even my own skin.
Mm.
And it was symbolic to not wanting to be in my body and just like going through that and how traumatic it was and how awful it was. And I couldn't get out of it. And so the woman who was guiding me was like, you need to be in a place of love. Like, tell me about your son, talk about Caden. And as I was talking about him, I started feeling love and it started helping me get back into my body and feeling I could be with myself. And just like, oh my God, it was really, really intense. And that was like the journey. That was like the beginning of it. And then I just kept doing ceremonies like once a year, pretty much for about like five years. And I haven't done it since. And I haven't really felt the need to. I felt like that was like a period of my life of like 5-6 years of where I really was in that space.
Yeah.
And oh my God, it was transformative.
Wow.
I highly recommend it.
Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, to Rob, not you.
I'm so happy that you had that experience and that you're on the other side of it. But it also breaks my heart that like, I wish I could go and give 16-year-old you an appropriate hug.
Thanks. You know, when I had that moment where adult Crystal was giving little Crystal a hug, right? Because it's like you go through these things when you're a child and it gets stuck in your body and your adult self can process it and say, you know, oh, well, I understand why I do this because my dad or my mom did this and it made me feel this way. But the little self of you never understood what was happening. And so it's like that part needed to be therapized.
Yeah.
And so then, you know, that's what I went through of like little girl Crystal had to feel the feelings.
I think also going full circle back to where we started, it's like that depth that you had and that access you had as a teenager, I think is all because of what you're just talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. It was like therapy for sure.
Okay. So I have a
fan question.
Go ahead. We have a soapy hotline and fans ask questions that they want you to answer.
Yeah. Okay.
And that's what we're up to.
What was the hardest storyline you ever filmed emotionally and why?
Oh, emotionally. What?
I just have a thought.
Okay.
No, but it's your question.
What are you going to say?
Well, you go first and then I'll see if I'm thinking what you were thinking.
Emotionally, maybe the cancer stuff.
That's not what you were going to say. What were you going to say?
I was going to say losing Christoph.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking.
Oh, I guess, okay. Because I was thinking about it from a different perspective.
Just
from
the character perspective. But I think just the, you know, just that experience, I think, on and off camera.
I guess I was thinking more in the vein of like hard to access the emotion. Sure. I may, but yeah, so I would say that. But if you're saying.
That was probably an easier thing to access, obviously.
Yes, that was easy because it was like real life for sure. Yeah. But yeah, that's how I took the question.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I don't know. It was written in. So.
Yeah, so who knows?
What was yours?
My question is, this is a really good one. What's a question about craft, not plot, that fans almost never ask you, but if they did, they might understand your performances on a different level?
Oh, that's... Ooh.
Right?
Okay, buckle in.
I'm like, wow, you gotta digest
yeah,
that.
Yeah, that's a good one. So, yeah. Like, how... What's, like, the way I...
Like maybe the way you, it feels like it's a question about preparation.
Yeah.
And how, when you are dealing with an experience that you personally have not gone through, like having cancer, like how did you prepare for that? And how does that?
Yeah, I would say it's kind of like a melange of things of like different acting classes where like one was like, I'm sure you guys know about like substitution, where it's like you take something from your real life that can substitute into the story that can help you access that emotion. But then sometimes you don't have something to substitute it for. So then you really have to rely on your imagination. So I feel like that's kind of what I do. It's like a mixture of like substituting stuff that can get me there. But then also like it's always easier too when you're acting with someone who can be there with you, and then you're kind of like feeding off of them too.
There's coworkers that I have worked with, you being one of them, where it's like, I just have to connect. And then whatever is on the page, we can just take it from there.
Exactly. And that's lovely when that happens.
Yeah. And the way you describe that, it reminds me of like, that's not just my acting, my approach to acting, but also parenting and anything that's important. I'm like, oh, I'll take like tidbits from all things that I've learned over the years. And I find things that really... I can apply.
Yes, absolutely.
Go from there.
You have to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where would you like Lily to, I mean, I know you've actually kind of answered the question. It's a dumb question to ask. Because where would you like to see her go? But you said you would like her to go through something.
You want her reunited with Kevin.
Yeah. You know, I'd be like, Kevin, do you
remember
your pills?
When I was young?
We've come full circle. You know, I think if Kevin
came back to
town. They must
have redeemed you somehow.
Yeah Kevin's good now, right?
Yeah. I think
where did they leave Kevin?
In a dumpster.
With Chloe?
Yeah, no.
In a dumpster.
Kevin and Chloe, Liz Hendrickson, are still married. Mm-hmm. And Marla Canellos, who's one of the writers on the show, says that whenever she can, she'll reference him somewhere.
Okay.
But, you know, he's off living in Salem now doing something else. But he's around, and I'd love to come back and visit you guys sometime.
Yeah, that'd be amazing.
Yeah.
Break up Lily and Kane.
Are you and Kane back together?
I'm sure we will be.
Yeah. Billy
She's
Flynn.
Like, I'm not
Billy
sure.
Flynn is.
I'm not
Billy,
sure if we are.
Yeah.
Billy Flynn is one of my. I hope he's listening. He's one of my favorite people.
I love him.
He's fantastic.
He's amazing. He's amazing.
And those
I
eyes.
Only met him briefly in the parking lot, and only because of him, because he was like obsessed. He's like, I love him. He's the best guy.
Yeah,
and
he
so
really
I met
is.
Him. He's so sweet.
Yeah. He's so great. He's I make fun of people when I like them, so I make fun of him hard.
Yeah. How ugly he is.
He's like, you know what? I'm so happy I'm a confident person because working with you would be rough. And I was like, shut up. You're stupid. Well, I love him, though. He's amazing.
He is.
And
give...
what an amazing actor.
I know. Oh,
like the way his axis of emotion is like, he's like just crying. I'm like, how do you do that?
And he'll also do something like, I had an emotional scene once and he didn't even tell me he was going to do it. He told our director and he came over at the start of the scene and gave me a hug. And I was like, you motherfucker. Because like he got me right into where I needed to be.
Yeah.
So he's terrific and he's also very generous. He's the best.
Yeah.
As are you. Please send him and everybody back at YNR.
Thank
our
you for
love.
Being here.
I will.
And thanks
for having me.
Here.
Yeah, this is great.
This was really fun.
Thank you.
I'm really happy to see you.
You too.
You guys, you can watch Crystal on The Young and the Restless weekdays on CBS or on Paramount Plus, and you can watch this episode and any other episode of Soapy that you may have missed on the CBS YouTube channel, and you can listen to us wherever you get your podcasts, and we'll see you next time. Thanks for being here.